Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Welcome, everyone. Dr. Jennings is reading from his book, Could It Be This Simple? And for the next two programs, we'll discover what he has to say about what he calls love's counterfeits. Today, Chapter 8, Part 1. Let's listen.
Beep, beep, beep. My pager startled me awake. The display number was quite familiar to me, the ICU at Hamilton Medical Center in Dalton, Georgia. After I'd returned the call, a nurse reported that they had just admitted a young man named Jerry who had tried to kill himself by an overdose of medication. The hospital wanted me to evaluate any further suicide risk. When I met Jerry, he was lying in a hospital bed with ECG wires running across his chest. An IV in his left forearm was connected to an infusion machine, and the monitor steadily beeped in the background. The charcoal given to neutralize the drugs he had taken had blackened his teeth, and dried charcoal was visible on his cheek and where it had dribbled onto his hospital gown. His hair was oily and uncombed, and his face unshaven and unwashed. After a few minutes of casual conversation to establish a rapport with him, I asked Jerry, "What's going on in your life that brought you to the point of suicide?" Beginning to cry, he told me that his wife was leaving him. "I want her to come back. I want her to regret leaving and decide to stay. I love her too much to let her go. I told her that if she left me, I would kill myself." "Why would you try to kill yourself if she no longer wants to be with you?" "Because I love her." While Jerry clearly had strong feelings for his wife, his behavior was far from loving. In fact, it violated the law of love and liberty. His focus was not on the health, welfare, and happiness of his wife, but on himself. He was operating from selfishness, not love. If she stayed simply because she feared that he would harm himself if she left, her love for him would die and resentment would build in its place. True love is difficult to find because of the many counterfeits that masquerade as it. The English language makes this even more difficult because the word love has so many meanings and connotations. We love our cars, love to go to movies, love our college football team. This type of love is extremely self-centered and could more accurately be called attachment or identification with. Our passion for such objects or activities derives from self-gratification or self-exaltation. Why do we love our Mercedes? Because of how it makes us feel, because of status. Why do we love our college teams? Because we have tied our personal sense of identity and even an aspect of our self-worth to their success. And how do people respond when their team begins losing? The more they love their teams, the more unloving they become. Such love is materialistic, self-centered, and fleeting, and obviously not consistent with God-like love. When desire, having rejected reason and overpowered judgment, which leads to right, is set in the direction of the pleasure which beauty can inspire, and when again under the influence of its kindred desires, it is moved with violent motion toward the beauty of corporal forms, it acquires a surname from this very violent motion and is called love. Socrates. This form of irrational, emotional, sensual love is erotic love. It often succeeds in drawing many victims into its web of destruction. But does true love reject reason and destroy good judgment? Eroticism counterfeits love in various ways to include pornography, the various perversions, and lust. Erotic love is also the basis of adultery, regardless of how passionately in love individuals involved in adultery claim to be. True love never damages and destroys, nor does it cheat, lie, or exploit. While hugely successful at seducing people into participating in it, eroticism, when thought about, is rarely accepted as true love, even by those who practice it. We see this in the fact that most people who indulge in erotic love are, in some way, ashamed of the fact and try to hide it. No father I have met proudly tells his children that he visits strip bars and is addicted to porn videos. Similarly, no mother I have encountered excitedly shares with her children that she has been cheating on their father. No, erotic love, when thought about, rarely gets confused with true love. But one counterfeit does frequently get mistaken for true love, and therefore is the most destructive of all counterfeits. It is so well camouflaged that many people actually accept it as true love. We know this counterfeit as dependency. What is dependency? A relationship based on clinging and self-centered need, not on mutual love and respect. It occurs when a person looks to another to be the source and supply of an internal craving, such as that of peace, security, confidence, well-being, or self-worth. Basing a relationship on such internal need will impair the ability to give, because the person seeks such a relationship only in order to satisfy a personal drive. In dependent relationships, feelings are extremely intense, but typically erratic and unstable. Relationships characterized by dependency are similar to roller coasters, always swinging between extreme ups and downs. Typically, the relationship involves intense attraction and arousal, followed by severe irritability and argument, accompanied by a few periods of calm. Because such people are dependent, they want the other individual for internal security or a sense of wellness, and so will exert pressure to control them and maintain the relationship. Because such behaviors violate freedom, it will always lead to rebellion. The dependent party experiences the rebellion as threatened abandonment or loss, and the insecurity increases, leading to an even greater need to hold on and control. The result is a vicious downward spiral. Jerry's marriage was just such a relationship, one characterized by intense feelings of attraction and need, followed by manipulation and control, with the inevitable disintegration of self when the relationship failed. Imagine the case of a Navy diver, the old-fashioned type depicted in the movie Men of Honor, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and Robert De Niro. In that movie, they wore suits with airlines to the surface, where pumps delivered air to the divers below. If you were one of those men, you would be dependent on those on the surface for your air. Should someone on the surface tell you to stand on one foot or they will cut off your air, what would you do? And if you wanted to go to the right but the ship turned to the left, what choice would you have? It parallels the situation of dependent relationships in which true freedom does not exist. But because the need is so great, intense feelings get associated with the one toward whom the dependence is directed. Imagine yourself drowning underwater when someone brings you an airline. Would you value that person? Would you have intense feelings for the individual? Would you want to hold on to him or her? And how would you feel if he or she decided to leave and take the airline away? Individuals can become so dependent on the emotional support from those on whom they rely that they experience the threat of losing their source of nurturance with the same fear and anxiety that divers would if someone threatened to cut off their air. Because the anxiety is so intense, persons in dependent relationships go to extremes and take desperate measures to prove their love to the ones on whom they depend in order to convince them to stay. And if the proclamations of affections don't get returned, often the dependent persons will threaten harm to themselves or even to those on whom they cling, all designed to retain control of the needed person. It was the situation that Jerry found himself in. He clung to his wife for a sense of well-being. Without her, the sense of emptiness and of individual disintegration became so great that he was willing to risk his life in an attempt to maintain control of her. But if Jerry's wife were to stay because of his threat to kill himself, she would lose her freedom and become a hostage to his threats. Eventually, she would develop resentment and rebellion, and the marriage would be doomed to failure. Consider Siamese twins attached at the hip. People growing up in this condition come to consider it as normal. Throughout the life of the Siamese twins, there exists a constant struggle for control, as neither can function without the other. They often meet the suggestion of separation with fear and insecurity, as neither has ever functioned on their own. Each feels that they will lose part of themselves, when in reality they are losing only the unhealthy attachment to the other. The actual process of separation is painful, yet not destructive. And it actually results in individual healing and increased autonomy. Those in dependent relationships experience many of the same symptoms. Attempting to break the unhealthy attachments often feels as if they are losing part of themselves, and often results in resistance to separating. When unhealthy attachments have solidified, cutting them is often painful. But severing unhealthy attachments does not mean losing the other person, just the dependency with its associated baggage of control. In the case of Siamese twins, following the separation, they can continue to spend time together, but now it will be because they freely choose to, not because they have to. And after breaking the unhealthy connection, the Siamese twins can now participate in far more activities than they were able to enjoy before. They can ride a tandem bicycle, play hide and seek, play catch, and so much more. Likewise, when a relationship rids itself of dependency, it can grow as individuals are able to engage in so many more healthy experiences. How does dependency get started? All children have a natural, God-given longing to be loved and accepted by their parents. It is a reflection of the love and trust we are to have in our Heavenly Father. But all children are also born infected with selfishness, which distorts and impairs healthy love from being experienced and expressed. Depending on a multiplicity of factors that include parenting, the temperament of the child, the environment, the child's biological makeup, and the free will choices of the child and spiritual upbringing, the infecting element of selfishness can grow increasingly stronger, and healthy love may never take root. Parents have the primary responsibility to raise their children in ways that will instill healthy love and eradicate selfishness. Unfortunately, this doesn't always happen. When healthy love does not successfully emerge and instead selfishness dominates, dependency is frequently the result. Before I go on, I want to clarify for those who may be struggling with rebellious children what the responsibilities of parenting are. Parents are not responsible for the outcomes of their children's lives, but they are accountable for their conduct in parenting. Because children have free will, and because there exist many influences other than parental ones, parents are never responsible for outcomes, but parents are always accountable for their own decisions and actions. This said, however, parental influence is significant and must be taken seriously. Unhealthy parenting will injure children, making it more difficult for them to develop healthy characters. But even when parenting is not only unhealthy but overly abusive, the child can experience healing from the injuries of the abuse and ultimately become whole. Healthy parenting does not guarantee a good outcome, but provides significant advantages toward such a goal. Likewise, unhealthy parenting does not guarantee a bad outcome, but creates disadvantages that make a favorable outcome more difficult. All children desire parental approval and validation. In dysfunctional families, however, the desire for affirmation from the parents does not get gratified in healthy ways. The basic dysfunction is unopposed selfishness in the parent that results in the parent seeking to get parental needs met from the child rather than seeking to sacrifice himself to meet the needs of the child. An unhealthy parent sends mixed signals of approval-disapproval, triggering insecurity in the child. The conflicting signals cause the child to fail to develop a healthy internal sense of self and instead train the child to continue to look to the parent for external validation. This results in an overly intense longing for love, affirmation, and acceptance. The child spends his or her energy seeking nurturance from the parent, and the parent uses the child's longing as a constant source of control and manipulation. The child grows to have an ever-increasing ambivalence toward the parent. Intense longing for parental approval alternates with resentment and anger. The destructive and hostile feelings toward the parent then leads to guilt. The guilt is accompanied by the fear that if the feelings of anger and resentment should be acted on, the child will lose his or her parent and then never get the affirmation so desperately craved. In unhealthy families, unfortunately, the children never receive the affirmation they seek. Young children idealize their parents. It means that they see their parents as nearly perfect with almost supernatural abilities. Therefore, when parental rejection occurs, the child makes the only conclusion he or she can. If my parent is perfect, and if I am unaccepted, something must be wrong with me. The child is incapable of recognizing that the parent is the actual problem.
That was Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings reading to us from his book, Could It Be This Simple? We'll pick up right where we left off on our next broadcast. This program was sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Be sure to check out the many resources available to you at comeandreason.com. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit comeandreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at comeandreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.